Welcome to the Positude Podcast, a one-hour show to bring joy and balance and happiness to you and to negate the negativity in your life.
Hello world, here's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
Welcome once again to the Positude Podcast. My name is Ira Robinson. As always, we're here with Maggie Hart. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Ira. How are you this week?
It's been a great week. It's been a rough week, but I'm having a great day. So I guess that's the point, right?
Absolutely. So we're doing two shows a month. I'm so excited about this. This is very, 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 very cool. And in going through the format for the first show, that'll be the same every first Sunday of the month. But just so that we keep it from getting stale and so that everybody doesn't get bored with the same exact format, on the third Sunday of the month, I've come up with a different format. So the first Sunday of the month will be one format. The third Sunday of the month will be another. They're a little bit varying, a little bit different. But that way, it'll keep everybody hopefully excited, you know, and keep their interest, and we can change things up a little bit. We can also cover more ground that way, too. So what do you think about that?
I love the idea myself.
Okay, awesome. So the first one that we have would be Veterans Affair. And this would be a heroic and inspiring story about our servicemen and servicewomen. Okay, so this week we have a story about a United States Army Staff Sergeant. His name is Travis Mills. Travis was on his third tour in Afghanistan, and he was caught by an IED blast, and it was just 4 days before his 25th birthday. He survived, but he became a quadruple amputee as a result of the explosion. And, you know, when we go through a traumatic experience like this, I think a lot of our initial reactions, just as humans, is because we're in shock, because we don't want to deal with the situation at hand. It's too much for our conscious minds to handle. He pushed away his family, and you know, it was really a very, very, very terrible situation. Asked his wife and family to take everything and just leave. He couldn't provide. He didn't think what they needed anymore. He felt totally useless. Basically, he was having a very, very dark time, as would be totally understandable in a situation like that. But his family refused to give up on him and his loved ones, and they continued to support him. And eventually, he was able to turn his outlook around and decided to continue to fight and, you know, embraced his family again and, you know, coming back to being the husband and father that he wanted to be and that he felt that he was supposed to be. And he, the one thing that I find amazing about this story is that he chose to go solely just to rehab rather than take any painkillers or any more painkillers. I would assume that would be because of his fear of becoming addicted, you know, and having it affect his mental and emotional status. You know, he also was told that it would take 3 years for him to recover. And just after 13 months, he's accomplished more than the doctors had ever thought was possible. His attitude is so optimistic that, I mean, in his own words, he says, instead of saying, look, it could be worse, you just know it will always get better. And so I just thought that that was an amazing story. Veteran stories hold a special place in my heart anyway, because most of my family was in service. And so I just thought this was a really beautiful story, and the man's courage. And again, you know, in the face of adversity, his family's decision you know, of course, to stick by him and to support him and carry him through, even when he was pushing them away and telling them to leave. I just thought it was beautiful. So that's the first one.
That really is. I love that story. That's great.
Yeah. Just gives you the feel good, you know, fuzzy feelings.
For those that are not aware, I can throw this in here real fast. There is a Facebook group out there for those veterans that are looking for help. And it's not just for vets. It's for everybody, anybody that has things like PTSD. The group is called Stop the 22 a Day. And I'll put a link into the description and the archive for this show. They're great. They're all vets. They're all people that have gone through PTSD themselves. And they're trying to do everything that they can do to be there as a helper, as a someone to walk beside you to get you through those times that you're going through when those things flare up on you, you know. And it really is a bad situation, but they're doing everything that they can do to make a very positive contribution out of a bad situation.
I think that's amazing. I I've been engrossed in a yard sale with a friend of mine the past couple of days, and later on in the day today I had a veteran come to the garage where we were having the sale in my girlfriend's house and with his wife. And obviously I recognized him because he had like a veteran's hat, you know, one of those baseball hats that they wear, the black hats with the flags on it. And so we got emotion discussion, and you know, being the type of person that I am, I tried to draw him out and ask about some of his experiences, and I thanked him for his service to our country. And you could tell that he was really kind of put off by that. He didn't know how to take that. I don't think that's something that he's accustomed to experiencing, you know, on a daily basis. But I started talking to him about my dad and how he has neuropathy and a lot of problems as a result of Agent Orange from Vietnam. And he says, you know, he says, I came home with some stuff too. He says, but he says, we all kind of have to deal with it. Unfortunately, it's a fact of life. And as we spoke more, he told me that he had some problems with his kidneys. There were some growths that they discovered, and he was going for surgery later on in the month. And on my table, I had, of course, because I'm such an avid, well, it used to be when I had time, such an avid book reader, a couple of boxes of books. And he looked at me and he said, you know, what are you going to do with these if you can't sell them? I said, well, of course, I'm going to donate them. And he goes, well, you know, you should give them to the, you know, to the disabled vets, you know, to the hospital or the VA. And I said, well, you know what? Why don't you just save me a step? You're going up there anyway. He was going to have some pre-op testing done in a couple of weeks' time. I said, just take them. And he looked at me and I said, well, not that book, Fox, because that's kind of like, those are my daughters are kind of romance. So you don't want those. But I said, here, take this box up with you, you know? And so we did. And we talked about his dilemma with his health problems, and I told him what I do, and I tried to give him some suggestions, and he became a little bit uncomfortable with that. He says, you know, I had a buddy of mine that went to this herbalist, and the guy almost killed him, and so I don't believe in that stuff. So I gave him the apple cider and baking soda recipe and told him some other things that he could do, and you know, he seemed pretty okay with it, not very open to it. Whether or not he tries it or not, that's up to him. But you know, it's just really nice to come in contact with him and meet him and be able to, you know, just give a couple of books for him to bring up there next week. That was cool.
That really is. One of the things that I guess, refer to people when I talk about like those different holistic kind of things is that these are the things that were used for thousands of years before modern medicine came around, and they kept us going, you know? So there is something to it. You know, there's definitely an experiential type of thing with it, you know?
Yeah, there definitely is. But sometimes when they're old school and they're set in their ways and a person is convinced that he's dying anyway, and that's definitely the impression that I got from him, was it wasn't that he had given up, but that he had already preset in his mind what his diagnosis would be, you know, from the operation. He just didn't have a positive outlook. And so that is really where I focused on more than anything, trying to make him feel better and have some positivity. And know that, you know, nothing's pre-written that way as far as that goes. He doesn't know it anyway.
Well, every doctor out there that's worth his salt knows that 90% of healing is done in the mind. So,
yes, exactly. So that's where I kind of focused on, and not so much on the herbs, you know. And then, like I said, they went off on their merry way. It was an encounter, and I'm always thankful for any encounter that I have throughout the day where I'm able to talk to somebody, you know, and share experiences with them. The next category that we have for the third Sunday of the month is Think Outside the Raggedy Box. Now, these are going to be thoughts to ponder, new ways of looking at things. Basically, what I'd like to see people do a little bit more, even if we're older, is opening and expanding our horizons. And the reason for that is because the more that we're able to see things from a different perspective, we're able to respect others' belief structures or cultures. And there's so much dissension going on in the country right now. I just think it's important for us to try and come together as a whole. We're all put here, you know, we're all a part of humanity. We're all put here to be a brotherhood, you know, regardless of our cultural or religious beliefs. And there's so much hate going around, you know, nowadays especially. It's on the rise, and it's just a horrible thing to see. And I'd like to have people just do these little exercises. Sometimes it'll be, you know, a story you or I will share, just something with some substance behind it to make people think. But to introduce it this time, I have an article that you can post on the website about different ways to think outside the box. And it's kind of cool. You know, it's different. There's, I think, maybe 11 things in the article. You know, anything as simple from studying another industry to taking a bath, learn another religion, you know, different things like that that you could try just to open up your horizons a little bit more and try and be a little bit more understanding, I think, as a result of how people's differences are and how we're all different, but in essence, we're all the same.
I agree 100% with that one. That's for sure.
So
I like to be open-minded, but not so open-minded that my brain falls out.
That's it. We don't want that happening. You got enough problems going on.
Absolutely.
I think we both do it this time, but that's a story for another day, right?
Yep, you got it.
Now, in the last segment, we have the happiness homework, which is something that people can do, you know, to try and make themselves and others feel better, reach out to community, what have you. The section that I have for this week is a to-do list for you. This is going to be something that's just for you, something to make you feel better. And this, I just picked something very simple this time because it's a very simple thing, but it's very beneficial, I feel, if you take the time to do it. And so many of us take, you lip service. Yeah, I'll do that tomorrow, or yeah, I'll do it next week, or I'll get around to it when I have time. And believe you me, I am, you know, I'm guilty, just as guilty as all of the rest of you are when it comes to something like this. When I get busy, you know, I do tend to push the things that I feel are less important off to the side. And typically it's an instance of something that I plan to do for myself. And we really need to stop that, honestly. We've got to take more time, a little bit more time for ourselves and to do things nice for us physically, emotionally, mentally, just to have that quiet time, that meditative time, that relaxation time. Because what happens is when we get too bogged down and work too hard with not enough rest, we become stressed, we become frustrated. It can take a serious toll on our body. You know, negativity creates disease in the body. We all know that. So the thing that I have for this week is just to take a hot bath. And when you go into the tub, set the mindset as you're drawing the water that you're going to go into the tub. And when you take the bath, as you drain the water from the tub, all of the negativity will leave down the drain from your body. I always suggest, and I know that you've done this before. I've suggested this to you and Jolene, and you're a fan of it, but sea salt. So take some sea salt, and you can get it from the dollar store. Don't buy the fancy gourmet stuff. Sea salt is sea salt. And just put like a handful or a cupful of that into your water. Maybe some essential oils if you have them laying around. Pure grade, though. There are a lot of synthetic blends out there on the market, and they just don't do the trick. They don't work as well. Maybe some Epsom salt. And the other thing that I suggest is raw organic cider vinegar. And these things will all help to relax you, to help your body relax, to help if there's any muscle tension. You can put peppermint oil in, or You know, there are many different oils that I use in my muscle rubs for sore muscles.
Lavender is wonderful.
Lavender is extremely relaxing, very beneficial as well.
Don't have a radio near the tub. You will fall asleep.
If you don't have a tub, and some people don't, you know, they live in an apartment, they don't have a tub, take a shower. And when you shower, though, just take a handful of sea salt, and it's abrasive, obviously, so you don't want to scrub yourself raw. A lot of people take things literally, and I had a client one time that I told to take a shower with sea salt, and she, like, literally was, like, scrubbing her skin off. No,
ow.
You don't need to do that.
Ow.
Just take a little bit and gently rub it all over your body as you're taking a shower and rinse off and shower as usual. And negativity, historically, is a wonderful, wonderful reliever of negativity. A lot of religious cultures use it to dispel negativity and evil. And what that does is when you shower or bathe with it, it takes the negativity off of your aura and anything that you're getting out of your body, the toxins and things like that. The sea salt actually helps to rinse it clean from your body. So it's a really cool thing to do. And when I have people that are very stressed, if obviously not all of us have time to take a bath every night. It's hard enough to find the time to take one once a month, you know. Shower with it every day for a couple of weeks and see if you don't feel a difference. You're going to think I'm nuts, but it works. And Ira can attest to that. I know he's a week.
Yes, absolutely. It does. You know, I spend a lot of time working. I'm usually focused doing work about 16 hours a day, at least with everything that I do for the radio station and my own shows and on and on and on, about 16 hours a day worth of work. And I notice a big difference when I use the sea salt thing. If I use it, boy, I feel so much relaxation afterwards. It's like, wow, it's a great neutralizer. You know, it's whatever you got going on, it's a great neutralizer for it.
Yeah, it really is. And it's very inexpensive. And it's something that, you know, when you get it wet, it, what's the word I want? It melts, it dissipates, it doesn't clog your drains or anything. It's not something that's going to solidify.
It just goes right down,
Once it's become, you know, part of the hot water and it's melted. And, you know, not very scientific tonight, folks. I apologize for that. But, but yeah, I mean, it's not something that's going to, like, clog your drain, you know, or do anything like that. So it's really, really a neat thing. And like I said, it's very inexpensive. But again, I just want to stress to everybody, and myself included, that we need to take a little bit more time for ourselves. So the third Sunday of the month will be something like this, something we can do for ourselves, simple and easy, that'll make us feel better.
You know, and one thing too is that when you use this kind of thing, you're also not contributing to anything negative going down the drain as well, like you get in a lot of the soaps and shampoos and that kind of stuff that has to be treated. You know, it's just salt. It doesn't have to, there's no treatment really involved with it, you know?
Exactly. And the raw organic apple cider vinegar, Bragg's is a popular brand. A lot of people buy that one. That also, believe it or not, will help to dispel negativity. So it's really cool too.
Love apple cider vinegar.
Yeah. I drink it with my tea and stuff at times. It really helps to ward off colds during the flu season. I take a little bit of it in like some hot water. Some people take it with honey. It's an amazing, amazing thing as well. The next section that I have is holistically healthy. And instead of doing an herb like we did the first Sunday, we're going to do a veggie. So I've entitled this section Vital Veggies. And the vegetable that I chose for this week is broccoli. And the reason that I chose it is because I'm part of an organic share that I get a couple times a month. And I got a couple of heads of broccoli in there, and I was drooling over it because, well, Italian people, what we do is we fry it up with olive oil and or some sort of oil and garlic. Oh, my gosh. You can bake it in the oven. It's an amazing I pasta with linguine, oil and broccoli with linguine. Those are what Italians do with it. But you can eat it raw. You can eat it as a snack. It's got vitamin K in it. It's a great source of folic acid, potassium. In the link that Ira will share on the website, you actually get a bonus because there's, I think, a recipe in there too.
There is.
It may just be baking it. Is there one? I thought there was. I thought I had seen one. A cup of cooked broccoli offers as much vitamin C as an orange, and it's a good source of beta carotene. And it's just a really good vegetable. And again, it's not overly expensive. it's pretty easy to grow in the garden. I grow some every year, usually. I love to get it as part of the share because this time of year, my garden is just now planted a week or so ago. So it's great to be able to get it, you know, early and from an organic place. So I don't have to worry about the chemicals from the store. You know, it's really cool. And then fantastic food recipes. The first Sunday of the month, we're going to do a tincture or, you know, a lotion or a lip balm, or last time we did cough drops. The third Sunday of the month, we're going to do a recipe. And I'm going to try and keep them very simple because, you know, a lot of us don't have the budget, number one, to go out and buy, you know, 82 different ingredients. And we don't have an hour and a half to necessarily cook, you know, a recipe like that. So I'm going to try and keep them as simple as possible. Sometimes they may be a little bit more lengthy. But the one that I chose for this week is rosemary and garlic or organic chips. And it's just simply potatoes, oil, rosemary, garlic, and sea salt. Things that most people have in their kitchen. It's very easy to make, and they are amazing. They taste so good.
I've made those before myself, and I love it.
Have you? I should have known.
I love it. They're my little garlic chips, man, and everybody loves it. I made some one night. I made some one night for myself, and I gave a little taste of it to the people that were living with me. I had five people that were living with me at the time, and they went out and bought 10 pounds of potatoes, brought them home, and said, "You're making this whole batch." I had to make 10 pounds worth of that stuff, and
oh,
it was gone.
Gosh.
It was all gone in one night.
That's too funny. I've tried the kale chips before, and I like them. But to be honest, you kind of really and that may be one recipe that we share later on down the road just because they are a very simple thing to make. But, boy, you've got to babysit them. They get brown and black so quickly.
They do, yeah.
You know, whereas the chips are a little bit easier to manage, I think. Don't you feel that?
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of satisfying, too, because everybody's used to potato chips.
So, yes,
exactly. You know, it's kind of like we get the craving for it a little bit. And so it really does satisfy it in a good, healthy way.
I think so. So I'm really excited about that one. I love that one myself.
You're not getting all those those extra dyes and everything that you get in the bag of Lay's. So.
Yes, Lay's used to be my favorite potato chip on the planet. But, yeah, I'm trying to stay away from things like that. I just have a weak moment now and then. But, I wouldn't be human, I guess, if I didn't, right?
So. Yep, exactly.
So now I think we're going to switch things up a little bit. And for this week, jump right into the comedy corner.
Indeed. I have them ready for the enjoyment. And hopefully you guys enjoy this. This first one is awesome. I love this. It's my favorite. It's my favorite bit ever. I listen to this all the time.
And the reason I chose it is because it includes broccoli in the skit, and that's the vegetable.
You got it.
So I thought that was really cool.
You got it. Here you guys go. Enjoy.
Remember when the cat would wander around the piano at night and scare the shit out of the entire family? Middle of the night, you hear like, "What is it?" "Oh, it's just boots." "It's okay. It's just boots." Half hour later, you hear something like, and it sounded really good. Wasn't that weird? All comedians want to be rock stars because they're incredibly cool. They always look like they're about to vomit. They have that rap before the song that makes no sense. You know, ladies and gentlemen, a long time ago, there were lots of people. But that was a long time ago. Then they start to sing these incredibly trite lyrics. Don't you feel like a lot of balladeers, it's like they're making them up as they go along, aren't they? I mean, it's like anyone can write these lyrics. Like, she's cold as ice. And the feeling was a nice. The lady I know if I didn't know her, she'd be the lady I didn't know. My lady, she went downtown, she bought some broccoli. She brought it home. She's chopping broccoli. Chopping broccoli. Chopping broccoli. Chopping broccoli. Chopping broccoli. Chopping broccoli. She chopped. She chopping, 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 she broccoli.
Thank you, you guys, for that great good night.
So many people want to be together. So
thank you. Good night.
You are a guy that follows politics religiously. Yeah. You always were. We've known each other a long time.
Yes.
A lot of people want, you know, talking about Obama's re-election. How do you think Obama's doing?
Well, I think he's doing fine because he can really, really talk. And the Republicans have a hard time putting sentences together. It's a difficult thing. No, no, no. Hold on. Hold on. Let me make my point. Ba-da-bop, 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 ba-da-bop. It's a feather in America's cap that we went from W to Obama, because you couldn't think of, you know, W's like, he's, yeah, yeah. And he was a plain-spoken man. You know, remember when he famously said, we got evildoers. That's kind of brilliant. You know, we got evildoers. Yeah. I can't say any more bad names. Doers. And evildoers like to do evil. Now, Obama is incapable of being the Harvard genius he is, you know. There are people in the world who wish to do us harm. You mean evildoers? No, capisci, fancy talk. But you could put him up. I mean, he's an intellectual. I mean, Clinton had a great phrase. Remember that one? I feel your pain. I do. I feel your pain. Obama would say something like, when I see that you're having a period of discomfort, I can experience compassion. What in the God's name? Now, Reagan, we're going back in a little time. Ronald Reagan was president in the 1980s, for all you kids. Remember when he went to the Berlin Wall and he said, he was very plain spoken. He said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. That was very clear.
Very, very dramatic.
Obama
and clear.
Would say something like, we believe that barriers of any kind act as an obstruction to people's good relationships. What the f*** are you talking about?
Reagan would not have
There's
said that.
There's nothing better than Ronald Reagan swearing.
Really?
You know? What the f*** are you talking about? There's nothing greater in all of comedy. The only thing better goes way back is Jimmy Stewart swearing.
That Oh, my God.
Single, I did that once on Letterman, and Dennis Miller after went, Carvey, in my entire life, I wrote jokes all day. I'd never get a laugh as big as Stewart going F-bomb. So I was like, yeah, well, how you doing? Yeah, well, pretty good. How are you doing? Yeah, well, you.
I've always been a big fan of Dana Carvey, man.
Me too. He's great. I love the old Saturday Night Live lineup. I mean, the, you know, Eddie Murphy and John Belushi. Those guys were all great, going right up on through. I loved that show. I was addicted to it for many, many years. It was always, always, you know, roll on the floor laughing every week. And I really miss those days, to be honest with you. Television is not at all what it used to be.
No.
In my opinion.
Definitely not.
And I know you agree with me there.
100%.
Segueing into that, I have a section that I've gotten together for you called Memorable, You Gotta Watch This Movies. Now, the movie that I've chosen this week is just simply because it's the first one, honestly, that came to mind. It is kind of a little bit older. Some of you may have seen it. If not, I suggest that you check it out. And if you've watched it already, it may be a good time to rewatch it. I can't get enough of it. I think it's a really cool story. And the name of the movie is The Blind Side. And it's a true story about an upper-class white family, Leanne and Sean Tui. And they take in a homeless African-American boy, Michael Big Mike Ohr, I think is how you say the name. And he's just had a really tough life. It's been a very tough time for him. The mom and he really seem to bond in this movie. I love her spirit. I've actually been told a lot of times that she reminds me, her character reminds people of me and vice versa. So take from that what you will. Probably the handbag, you know, the gun in the handbag. See, the biggest one. But, this boy is pretty much living up in the streets. His mother was a drug addict. He was in foster care. I mean, he's just had a really, really difficult life. And it's the story of how the family bonds and how they work with him and give him back his sense of self-confidence, so that eventually he ends up becoming the first round pick of the Baltimore Ravens in 2009 for the NFL draft. And I just thought it was a very, very nice story. I liked the comedy in it. You know, I just, the whole thing, I thought it was a really great movie. Have you seen this, Ira?
I've seen it once, yes, and it was really good. I loved it.
I thought it was very enjoyable. So that's my pick for this time. And we'll go back and forth and we'll take turns maybe choosing. And I know there are some more modern ones out there, like I said, but this one was just the first one that came to mind. And I remember loving it and I've watched it several times. And so, you know, give it a shot if you haven't watched it. The next section that I have is Mamma Mia. And this will be stories about our mothers or our grandmothers, or, you know, even if we want to stretch it a little bit, we can go into stories of special moms and grandmas that we've heard about. But for this week, in keeping with the community, you know, sense of community, developing a closeness with our neighbors, I decided that I would tell you kind of how I grew up on Sundays. It was, you know, two and three generations in the house, and Sundays were always a cooking day, and the women were cooking, and they would make this incredibly huge meal, and it usually consisted of a whole lot of pasta. And every single Sunday, our door was open. The wine would be flowing, and, you know, it's a funny thing, because growing up in an Italian-based family, even though my mom wasn't Italian, we all, you know, everybody had wine. You know, homemade wine was there, or they'd have a gallon of, you know, Ernest and Julio Gallo. But none on that side of the family ever turned out to be alcoholics. It was tradition. You know, it was understood that at dinner you had a glass of wine. And it's actually very, very good for your circulatory system.
It sure is.
You.
It sure is. One doctor that my dad had told him that he needed to drink a glass of wine every night because it would basically eat the cholesterol that he had overabundance of.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And so, you know, Sunday mornings would come, and I always look forward to Sunday mornings as a child, typically because my pop and I would get up, and he would put me on his shoulders and walk me downtown, and he would take me to his buddy's store, a newsstand kind of slash grocery store, and he would pick out his Sunday papers, and I would be able to get a comic book. And then we'd go to church, and we'd always leave right before communion, before I had received my first communion, having been raised in a Catholic family, you know, Catholic school, the whole nine yards. We'd rush out right before communion, okay? And we would go to Uncle Frankie's house, who was my pop's best friend on the whole planet. And we would sit at their table and have coffee and Italian cookies, and we'd watch wrestling. And he always told me, don't tell Mom, don't tell Mom. And I always thought, I always kind of figured that she was suspicious and knew that we didn't stay for the whole Mass. But but we'd skip out and we'd go do that. And then we'd go to my Aunt Andonia's house. And she used to drink, Anisette, it's an Italian liquor. And she would always give me a little bit of the Anisette. And then she'd give me one of those big old Stella Doro Anisette cookies. And she'd do that so that it masked the scent, you know, so that I'd have the Anisette scent on my breath, but so that Mom wouldn't know that she'd given me liquor, she would think it came from the cookie. So we'd have our little bit of Anisette and visit with Aunt Andonia and have my Anisette cookie, and then we'd head home. And the house was always brimming with people, and my door was always open. I mean, I'm still touched and amazed. It's the way that we were raised, and it's the way that I've raised my child, but on Sundays, our door was always open. We'd have the Greek neighbor across the street come over. We'd have Zitzy Tommy, is what we called him, down the way. He would come over, and, you know, the whole family would be there. And whoever showed up, showed up. And everybody, usually Zitzy Tommy brought a loaf of Italian bread. Steve would bring something from his garden. And we would just sit there and have an incredibly wonderful meal and just the most precious family time. And thinking back on it now, knowing what's involved in cooking a meal like that for so many people, I'm still amazed at, you know, the strength that the women in my family had, especially with some of them not being, you know, so young, cooking all day, standing on their feet in the hot kitchen. We didn't have air conditioning, you know, and going through all the motions to prepare a really nice meal, not just for their family, but for their extended family, anybody that came to the door. And then after a huge meal, you know, they'd have coffee and maybe a piece of cake. And, you know, I have been raised that way. As I said, I raised my daughter that way. I mean, over the years, we've taken in I don't know how many kids. And, you know, it's just been always understood that if somebody needed a place to go, they could come here and there wouldn't be any questions or any judgment. And I'd really like to see us come back to that. You know, we've spoken about this before, Ira, in past interviews, children, you know, family, getting back to basics, opening your door to your neighbors, becoming close with your neighbors, establishing those relationships, just a sense of unity and community. I feel especially in the hard times that we're in right now and the hard times that are coming. And it's also financially, when you think about it, it can be beneficial to you as well, because if you pull together your resources and let's say you've grown something in your garden, and maybe that person has made some jarred, you know, homemade jarred spaghetti sauce, you know, or they've made a big pot of sauce or, you know, what have you. If everybody were to bring something and contribute, then it wouldn't be as financially a burden on you as you're having to buy all of the ingredients to provide your family with a really good home-cooked meal. And you can get together, you can help to prepare the meal. You know, the guys can sit around and watch football or whatever, because, you know, the guys aren't, well, nowadays it's a little different, but typically the guys aren't the ones in the kitchen cooking, at least when I grew up. I mean, I realize things have changed a little bit, but I just feel that if we were to get back in that habit, even once a month, it would be so beneficial to us and to our communities, to our neighbors, getting to know people, you know? What do you think about that?
Well, I have always had an open door policy myself. As I said earlier about the story about the potatoes, you know, I had five people living with me at that point in time. You know, I've always been one to pick up the strays, you know, I guess you could say.
Yep.
And they always walk out of the house, you know, a better person because they've seen how I live my life. They see that, you know, this openness is something that's so different today. people just are not used to it at all. They kind of get freaked out a little bit at first. And then,
yeah, they actually look at you like you're crazy when yeah. you offer something like that. Like, come to my house for dinner. They're like, why?
Yeah.
You know, what do you want in exchange for it? Or, you know, it's there's always, seems like they always place an ulterior motive there when there's not one.
When all know? When all you're doing is just inviting and wanting to spend some time. Yeah, that's it. That's it. So I've always been of that mindset myself. You know, come over, you know, it's like when people come over, the first thing that they do is, you know, they'll sit down and I'll say, you want something to drink or something to eat, you know, offer them food, offer them drink. Yeah, sure. I'm like, well, get your butt up and go get it. You're here, you know, go find whatever it is that you want.
Well, old school, we used to wait on people and I still have that habit. I've got to admit. But.
Yeah, I do that. I do that too. Cause they kind of get freaked out when I say, just go out and get it, you know, so I'll go get it for them. But you know, it's just kind of that putting them off kilter a little bit, I think is a good thing. You want to shake people up a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they would walk in without knocking most of the time, you know, and just walk in and sit down. And then,
oh yeah,
you know, after dinner as a little girl, one thing that I'll tell you, it's really geeky, but they always bought me Silly Putty or a Slinky or a Yo-Yo every week. And it was my favorite thing in the world to do, to sit on like Zizzy Tommy's lap. He was the town plumber, who was a very, very close family friend of my pop's. And you know, he'd sit there and we'd stretch out the Silly Putty on the comic strips. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I love doing that.
I'm dating myself big time. I won't do that anymore.
I love doing that.
But yeah, you know, the amazing thing to me about it is no matter what my family had, we always shared.
Well, you know? it sounds to me like your family was much like mine. I mean, with my mom, all my friends, all of the people that would come over, you know, I'd literally have dozens of friends come over and that kind of thing. And the first thing they would do is when they would walk in, my mom, I'd introduce them, you know, this is mom. And you call her mom, you know, she is mom, you know.
And that's the way it is with my child. The kids still call me mom in the neighborhood, you know, how many years later. It's like, it's really cool.
Yep.
And, but the amount of time that she put in and the kindness in her heart and the generosity that my mom, my grandma, every female really in my family has shown throughout the years was for me a really good, they were very, very good role models. The servitude, you know, and the wanting to help others, you know, when somebody sat down at that table, they didn't move unless they had to go to the bathroom. They got waited on hand and foot. And I know in today's society, that's not something that's typically accepted, you know, and it's maybe the feminists are probably, you know, standing up on chairs and screaming at me right now. But that's the way I was raised in my home. And when you come into my home for dinner, you know, see, you're a guy, so you were raised, get up and get it yourself. You want a beer, get it out the fridge. I was raised, you know, if your glass is empty, I'll get up and leave my dinner half eaten to get you a refill on your glass. You
right.
know what I mean? So it's a little different culturally, and also I think because of the differences in sex. But I still carry that through, and I'm not ashamed of it. And if you got a problem with it, it's too damn bad.
Deal with it. Deal with it while I go get you your glass of wine.
It gets me in trouble, though, because a lot of people come here and they feel the energy in the home and they're like, they love it here for some reason. I don't have a real fancy home or anything really, you know, luxurious, but I've made it a home and the energy here, I get them here. And the only thing is, it's very hard sometimes to get them to leave. They want to stay.
Been there, too.
My favorite cousin who passed away a few years ago, Marie, I mean, we were like sisters, and she would historically come up from the city for like a 2 or 3 day visit or like a weekend, and it ended up being like 5-6 days to the point where I'd be like physically exhausted from working all day.
You gotta go.
And playing cards all night and telling stories. And finally, after the 6th day, I'm like, love you, girlfriend, but you gotta leave.
You gotta go. You gotta go.
All right, how much time have we got here, Ira? And then I'll
We've got about 15 minutes left.
15 minutes? Okay. Let's go right into the Way Cool affirmations then. And then we'll take a break and we'll go into a quick meditation and we'll end it on that so that everybody's relaxed at the end of the session. How about that?
Sounds great.
So this week's Way Cool affirmations is, my body is healthy, my mind is brilliant, and my soul is tranquil. And then the scripture that I put in there this week is 3 John 1:2. In all good things, I am prospering, and I will be continually having good health just as my soul is prospering. And the reason that I chose these two together is because they kind of complement each other, but also because this week, personally speaking, I've had some very close people to me who are having some health issues. And again, it's a mind over matter mindset. With the affirmations, the more that you say them, the more that you believe them, you're in essence healing your body because of your belief structure. So I thought those were really cool.
Definitely.
And then if you want to go ahead and go right into the dancing and jamming music while we pee, we can get that over with and I'll go into the meditation.
All righty. So here you guys go. We'll take a little momentary break here and you guys can enjoy the really cool music here.
I do. Sorry, I muted you there for a second, and I couldn't get it to unstick.
Is it a shame too that I really love Elvis movies? You know, some of those old Elvis movies where they're dancing and singing and everything. I love those movies.
Blue Hawaii and all of those. Yep,
oh yeah.
I'm right with you. In fact, that was one of the things my mom and I used to watch together when I was a child. Every Sunday, an Elvis movie would come on, and we'd watch it together.
I used to watch all those Elvis movies, followed by Kung Fu movies. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird.
Yeah, and Shirley Temple used to be on, too, and also Tarzan. Yep.
I love that
We're
stuff,
dating ourselves,
man. I know.
Stuff.
It's terrible.
All right. How much time have we got left for the meditation?
We got about 8 minutes.
Okay. Would you mind starting the music? I'm just going to do a simple guided meditation. 8 minutes isn't a lot of time, but I'll bring you in and hopefully relax you a little bit and then take you back out. And then we'll end the session on that note.
Sure thing. Go for it.
Okay. For this week, I've chosen a beach meditation with the warm weather approaching and summertime coming. Everybody, if you could just relax and get comfortable, you know, sink back in your chair. Or if you're on a sofa, put your feet back and just take some deep breaths and relax your body. And we'll start at your feet. And relax your feet and your ankles. Relax your calves, your knees, your thighs. Relax your pelvis and your hips. Relax your lower abdomen. Your stomach. Moving up into the chest area. Relax and breathe. Totally clear your mind. As you're relaxing, I'd like for you to picture the warm sunshine. The sun is very high in the sky. It's a very, very beautiful bright yellow. As you're taking your deep breaths and relaxing deeper and deeper, you feel the warmth of the sun on your body. Going deeper, relax up into your shoulder area, your neck area, your head area. Going down from your shoulders, relax your upper arms, your elbows, your lower arms, your wrists, your hands all through your fingers. As you take these deep breaths and relax your body, picture and feel the warmth of the sun on your face, the heat of the rays, the comfort that it provides, the warmth. The warmth spreads all through your body, and as you relax deeper and deeper, your entire body now relaxed. You can feel the texture of the sand under your body. Continuing to take a few deep breaths, slowly, easily. You feel your body sinking deeper and deeper into the sand. The sand is almost an air mattress for you. It's very comfortable, very inviting, very warm from the sun. In the spot that was there, warmed by the beautiful sun before you decided to lay down on that particular spot at the beach. As you go deeper and deeper, breathing gently, deeply, I want you to feel the breeze from the ocean, which serves to cool the hot sun, to make it totally comfortable for you, so that while the sun provides warmth, the breeze from the ocean provides a cooling effect, so that you're totally relaxed and comfortable, feeling the breeze waft across your body, feeling the warmth of the sun sinking deeper and deeper into the sand, so deeply in fact that you can feel every grain of sand under your body. Your body continues to sink deeper and deeper. You become more and even more relaxed, continuing to take your deep breaths. You're totally at peace. You're totally at calm. Totally feeling rested. Knowing that at every moment, you are cupped in the hands of angels, totally safe and secure. Knowing that at this precious time, as you relax your mind and relax your body, continuing to take these deep breaths, that you are ever protected and loved. You are totally safe and secure. It's okay to let yourself go and relax even deeper into the sand, so that you can feel the grains of sand sticking to your body. But it's not an uncomfortable feeling. It's a warm, inviting feeling. It feels as though you're laying in a cloud. As the sun continues to warm you, you continue to breathe. You can hear the sounds of the ocean. They relax you, the sounds of the waves coming in and going out. Sounds of seagulls overhead, becoming more and more relaxed. In this state of relaxation, you're able to drift, let your mind wander. You're able to release all negativity as you continue to breathe and relax farther and farther into the sand, feeling the warmth of the sun, the breeze from the ocean, the lull of the waves, gently taking you deeper and deeper. So that you are so relaxed, you're almost to a point of sleep. All negativity will leave your body, starting at the top of your head through your crown chakra, going all the way through, coming out through the very soles of your feet. You are peaceful, you're relaxed, you're calm. You continue to breathe deeply, soak in the sun, feeling the gentle wafts of the breeze on your skin, hearing the waves in and out, gently lulling you, hearing the sounds rather of the birds. And I allow you to breathe and relax, knowing that you're safe, knowing that you're loved. Enjoy this moment. All negativity has left your body. Your cells are being repaired. The disease is leaving your body. The worry and fear has left your body. As you continue to breathe and relax. Now I ask that you gently start to wake up, coming from the top of your head. Open your eyes just very, very gently, still breathing slowly. You can feel your body start to come alive. You feel refreshed, relaxed, and totally awake as your body starts to open up and starts to become awake and aware. You're totally relaxed. You're in a state of complete awareness. Rest there for a minute and enjoy the rest of your evening. Thanks, Ira. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you have a great evening.
Thank you, Maggie. This has been a wonderful show. I'm glad to have been a part of it. Everybody out there, have a wonderful week, and we will talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye, everybody.